part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
How have you been?
I have been really good. Just the kids' lives are going a little faster than I would like, but sure. Just pretty busy and watching them grow up and then, you know, doing the comics and the writing and all that. So it's been good. It's been good. I mean, it was a crazy time and now it's, you know, yeah. I've been trying to ignore the noise of the election, but
good luck. Yeah. I've been trying to too. Me as well. So do you realize it's been 4 years since you've been on this podcast?
Yes, I do realize it.
That's crazy. I can't believe it's been 4 years. And do you realize that, well, I guess since it's been 4 years that, well, we were very political on the last one, but we were probably heading into another midterm election season.
Was that before though? We were still in before times. I like to call it before 2016, weren't we? Or no, we weren't.
Yeah, no, we were after. So I think we were heading
after,
into.
You're right.
Yeah.
I'm in denial.
Yeah.
We did get political. It's always political though these days.
Yeah,
so
it's always political.
Hard not to be.
Well, the subject matter was political with your last book. A little bit, which was Pistol, we should say. And let's just start the chat and just say, like, if you want to hear the previous interview, go back to parttimefanboy.com and look up Pistol if you want. PISTIL. That was it.
Yes.
Right.
And yeah, that was a great conversation. I remember that one.
I re-listened to it today. It was one of my better conversations, I should say, we did it together. So there you go.
Yes. All right. And you know, I still am finishing up Pistol. We had a lot of delays, but hopefully, we will have the last one done by next year. And then I'm going to, like, I've got three of them I'm just holding on to because it's just, I wanted to get them all done before I finished releasing them.
Sure. Of course.
You know, beginner mistakes.
Yeah. Well, let's just say who you are. Your name is Jessica Mason Judd, right? Now you added the Judd since last time.
Well,
is that correct?
Yeah. And Jessica Mason when I'm writing or a creator, and then I'm Jessica Judd, in my other,
gotcha.
My other life.
Gotcha.
And, you know, and when I direct films, sometimes I'm Jessica Judd too, but I haven't directed a film in a long time. So
nice,
that's
nice. So which name do you want to go by, Jessica?
Let's go Jessica Mason for this, because that's where everybody will know me from.
Okay, sounds good. Jessica
I know on
Mason.
Facebook it's Jessica Mason Judd, so people who know me from both worlds can figure. But yeah.
It's also Jessica Mason Judd on Kickstarter, so it works
for
me.
That is true. That is true. Because I started as a backer a long time ago, and it was before I got on Kickstarter, before comics even.
Oh, wow.
And I would back like more science-based, weird science-based projects that, by the way, do not deliver as well as comics. So I'm glad it was comics, because I've yet to have a comic not come to my house. So from Kickstarter, like, I've gotten every single one I've backed.
Yeah.
So that's what I like about comics.
I don't know that I have received every one. I have to go back and check. I'm really bad about like going back. I know that people I've interviewed have always completed, you know, and sent me stuff, but I don't know. I'd have to actually go back and double check, because I'm apparently like a super funder or something, which is weird because I don't throw like tons of money at people.
I just got super backer this last month.
Yeah. Super backer. That must be.
Yeah. I was like, how do I don't feel like I'm a crazy backer, but I guess I, when I see a person's project that I like their work, I'll usually at least try to back it.
Digital level. Yeah. Well, let's say what you're here for. Let's just start off by saying you are, obviously we've spilled the beans a little bit. It's for a Kickstarter, correct? Currently up on Kickstarter. And it is Mary Shelley's School for Monsters, Origins, right?
Origins. Yes.
Nice.
It's, and this project is basically the prologue of the larger book that's coming. I'm hoping in the summer. I have it all complete. It's just up to printers at that point,
sure.
called La Llorona and the Machine. So it's kind of telling you the beginnings of this new world that I've been creating with Anna Wisecheck. And so it's a, and I can just get into it if you want me to.
Yeah, go for it. I mean, give us the pitch. Let us know what it's about.
So for me, well, Mary Shelley's School for Monsters is basically, it starts back when Mary Shelley herself is 12 years old and she's in the graveyard reading by her mother's grave, as she was wont to do back then. And she sees something, some creepy person, and she sees a mausoleum, there's a storm, she goes into it, and she comes in contact with the acute cuddly version of the Necronomicon, Necro, and this evil mad occult scientist. And when she touches the Necro, she touches Necro and tries to rescue him from the mad scientist, she's bound to the book and it splits her in two. And one version of her goes on to be the Mary Shelley we all know, who wrote Frankenstein and, you know, became the infamous woman she is and was. And then the other becomes Shell, a supernatural teenager who continues to like fight for misunderstood monsters and rescue them against, you know, rescue them from the evil humans that tried to hurt them. And, you know, so that's basically the kind of where it came from. And then the larger comic is set in modern times, and it, and each, and hopefully each book, there will be books, not just one book, and each book will be a specific monster that they have to go rescue, her whole team and from the school, like kind of like with X-Men, but with monsters, you know.
Nice. Yeah, it always leads back to the X-Men.
It's got to always come back to X-Men, or you're just not doing it right.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's always my joke with my daughter in Harry Potter. I'm like, the X-Men were doing this 40 years ago. Like, you know what I mean? I'm just like, school for, you know, gifted teenagers. Come on, people. No.
And you know, that fantasy, like, that's why I know my kids really like any book that is about a school that, you know, some young child gets invited to, and they have special powers and they have a place of belonging finally. Sure. And I think that just appeals to especially preteens, you know, tweens and teenagers a lot, like having, when they feel like so out of themselves and they kind of feel like monsters or mutants, you know, probably at this age. So I think that fantasy, no matter whether it's X-Men, School for Monsters, Magic School, whatever, it's so appealing. It's appealing,
sure,
to me.
Sure.
That'd be great.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, there must be some appeal in it, because it's an idea that keeps getting, you know,
yeah,
redone and redone, and like Lightning, whatever, the Lightning Thief, and like all these, you know, it's like, but it, yeah.
Well, the original is Ursula Le Guin, right? She had her, I'm going to totally forget the name of the series right now. My mom's going to just freak out at me. it's her famous series too. I can't believe my brain, it's just blanking. I know it. It's on my bookshelf, but she had the original School for Monsters. You know,
oh.
School, Magic School. It's not funny, and you know, it's not like what it is today, but yeah.
Oh, sure. It's much, is it more serious or like more?
It's a little more serious. It's more serious. It's just of its time, yeah.
But your book is sort of like more like what, YA or all ages, or like what sort of age range are we talking about?
I kind of classify it as in this middle area. I think it's good for middle grade and YA. And I think adults would like it as well, but it's definitely has a 12-year-old protagonist, but she's immortal. So she kind of skates the, you know, she's really 200 years old. So, this first book is definitely middle grade. But I don't know. I just feel like teenagers will love it as well. So it's definitely in one of those middle, it's my favorite area to be, like the middle, between the middle grade and the YAs.
Sure,
like my spot, usually. Not Pistol, obviously, but my other stuff that I write.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, from what I've seen, it looks very, very cute. Why Mary Shelley? Like, why? I mean, it's a dumb question, kind of, but, no. You know, for anybody that knows her history or anything, but kind of like, why Mary Shelley? Why make her the protagonist of your sort of superpowered, I'm going to say superpowered, which may be just me because coming from comics and stuff, but
that's okay.
You know, her superpowered adventure.
They have supernatural powers.
Supernatural.
And they are magical creatures more. They're more occult or magical creatures than they are like superheroes. But for me, Mary Shelley, it was like, I always wanted to do something about Mary Shelley because for her story is just, she was such a radical for her time. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of heartbreak when she was young. Her mother died at childbirth. She was constantly kind of trying to find her place with her radical parents. One, her mom was a radical feminist. Her dad was also a radical writer of the times. And she made a lot of mistakes in her life. But what I was very interested by the way that she ran her life is she was very true to like her heart, to herself, to the things that she was following, despite like the consequences. And I think even sometimes when society looked at her as like a monstrous outcast, or she felt like they looked at her like that, she still kind of remained true to that person and to her, you know, to what she wanted to be as a woman, not like what the world was telling her to be, what society was telling her to be and how society wanted her to fit in exactly. And so, and then from a very young age, I was very into the, Frankenstein story and the retellings of it. Something about like something being created and then thrown away by their creator and not being able to like find a place in society and then just having that kind of spin out, you know. I've always liked that, and you know, and then sure. And then I watched, you know, of course, at some point I watched Edward Scissorhands. I'm like, oh, it's kind of like, you know, you get the whole thing like that. I've always like in mythology, any monster, you know, you've got Medusa, you've got La Llorona, you've got these spirits and all these different, specifically female mythological creatures or monsters or ghosts, and you read into them, and so often they're a woman being punished for something. Mm. And I feel like Mary Shelley felt like she was being punished a lot. And I really wanted to explore that and give them kind of new stories. I mean, the same stories, but new stories, and showing those creatures and those monsters in a different light. So that's kind of why Mary Shelley and why monsters, because in Origins on the Kickstarter, you won't meet the whole gang, but because you'll meet Necro, the Necronomicon, you'll meet Frank, Dr. M's failed experiment, and Shell's best friend. You'll meet Shell and Dr. M, and you'll get the 200 years before prologue to the larger book. But in the larger book, you'll meet the other two characters, and you have Medusa, and she's like a really cool new version of Medusa, and Will, who is a Will-o'-the-Wisp, and other members of the team, and that come together to go, and they have to rescue La Llorona. She's been trapped by an evil video game programmer with some kind of occult magic, and they put her in the video game, and kids are now going missing, of course, because La Llorona steals kids, and so they have to figure out how to free La Llorona from the video game and also return the children who have been gone missing. Not that they care about the children. They care about La Llorona, but the children need to be safe.
The children are secondary.
They're secondary, but they are important because they have to get them out for the townspeople.
Yeah, something in this book occurs where Mary Shelley gets split up into two versions, right? And
yeah.
So there's this one kind of like badass, like monster. I was going to say monster hunter, but she's more a monster helper, right?
Yeah, like a rescuer. Yeah,
yeah, rescuer. And so she's called Shell, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so does she have powers? Is she like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer type? Or is she just like surviving on her wits and her skills and stuff like that?
No, the minute she connected to the Necronomicon or Necro, they kind of became united and bound together, and they are like one of the most powerful occult items on the planet now. Like they're a kind of a connected being. So she in the book are very supernatural. That's what makes her immortal. It's what gives her all her powers. So she is very strong. She's definitely got Buffy level fighting powers. And she, when she has that book, they can do lot of damage or they can undo a lot of damage, which is what they're usually doing.
sure
they're capable of opening some portals and fighting off with most, like, the because sometimes you got humans just messing around, like, with the occult that she has to deal with.
And, stupid, pesky humans.
Yeah, humans that don't know what they're doing is usually the case, yeah. But Dr. M is, like, he's definitely the villain. He's based on, he's kind of inspired by the, Dr. Moreau from the Islands, you know,
oh,
more
nice.
Of a modern version of him. And yeah, I'm a big fan of a lot of these old, you know, these old stories, and I kind of wanted, and some of these old villains, and I wanted to kind of bring them into, you know, a new version of them. So Dr. M is, not only is he's inspired by Dr. Moreau, but he is in my version of the story, he's the real Mary Shelley's inspiration for Victor Frankenstein, obviously, because she thinks what she saw in that mausoleum was just a vision, some dream she had, and she writes the story. So parts of the story is what I'm saying. This is not the truth, obviously, but in my version of the reality, some of that was like repressed memories that came out in Frankenstein, you know. Mm. So part of Shell's experience in that mausoleum with her stayed with the actual Mary Shelley. So that's how Frankenstein, the story, plays into it at all. But yeah, it doesn't play that much.
That's cool. I didn't realize that you were, I mean, you know, we're friends on Facebook and stuff like that,
yeah.
Social media, which is something I may be fading away from. I'm making decisions, people. But, yeah. You know, and we've met in person like once or twice. And you, like I said, I've interviewed and stuff, but I didn't realize that you were such like, or it seems like you are a monster lover, like a lover of like that sort of kind of like creature thing. Are you?
Yes, I am. I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm like an expert, but
sure.
From a very young age, I watched a lot of these old movies with my dad, like Sunday afternoon, you know, any creature feature, anything with a monster in it, I was fascinated by. Anything supernatural, I was fascinated by. But creatures have always just, you know, King Kong was my 1922 King Kong is my favorite movie. It's always been my favorite movie.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, go into that. I want to know more about that. Because, I mean, I showed my daughter King Kong like on Turner Classic Movies like when she was little, when she was younger.
Yeah.
And she loved it. Like I was surprised. Like she loved it. She was like, this is great. And I was like, oh, wow, great. And me just being surprised, thinking like, you know, young kid won't like black and white. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's a giant ape or whatever. You know, I was just... But I mean, it really held up for her and obviously me rewatching it. Like, when did you first see King Kong?
I saw King Kong at the first house I can remember, which means I saw it before I was five.
Okay.
And it scared me. All I really remember from that viewing is King Kong's big face and then the nightmare I had that night. he came out the side of my bed and I was screaming. But when I rewatched it a little later, like probably when I was like 9 or 10, I just loved it. And I think part of what I loved about it is it's probably started my love for stop motion animation as well. But I think why it still holds up for kids is that stop motion and the practical effects. Like I think that kind of stuff feels a little bit more, it felt a little more real for some reason, you know, that creature, even though it looked kind of ridiculous sometimes. I don't know. I just, something about that King Kong's just always, I have like the poster up in my house. I've always had it. That story of how we make monsters, like to me, those stories, I think, and this is why I like Mary Shelley too, is the monster is not the monster in a lot of these creature stories, right?
Yeah.
I think for me in a lot of these movies and these stories that appeal to me is that you're watching a creature or a monster, but the true villain isn't the thing you're initially scared of while you're experiencing it. It's you come to learn it's the humans that are involved. You know, they have made choices to unleash this monster. They've created this monster without any thought to what would happen. I mean, that's even Jurassic Park, you know, you get a lot of that. And it ultimately is just exploring in nature, like when things mutate in nature, I mean, in all these, even these superhero stories and everything, it's usually because humans have made a bad choice, you
sure.
know? And so that's like creature movies are a safe place to kind of explore that heavy topic, which I like.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I
What
guess I like
about,
that
oh no,
topic.
sorry, go ahead.
No, I said I guess I just like that heavy theme and I like to come back to it
Sure.
quite
I mean, for me,
frequently.
it has always seemed like Frankenstein, even kind of Dracula in a way, like the creatures and at King Kong, it's kind of like also the, I don't know what the proper phrasing would be, like Avatar for like the misunderstood or the right, like the
Yeah.
teenager, the what a teenager would identify with, you know, where it's like
Yes.
everybody's messing with me. Why don't you just leave me alone? Like, I just want to be left alone, sort
Just
of thing,
trying to
right?
love this lady and you got
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a whole other message we don't want to get into. Like
No, of
that,
course
yeah,
not.
that's
No.
not good. That's not good.
I
That's a
mean, well,
good.
they did throw her up there like bait, so I don't know what you're
Yeah, I know, I
She's
know.
just a
Yeah.
monkey.
Send the
No, I'm
woman, send the
like
woman. Oh my
Yeah.
gosh. That's so funny. So King Kong really did it for you, huh?
Yeah, he did. And then, you know, and then I'm trying to think, you know, and then I got into like, I was just really into Greek mythology too. So then I mean, Clash of the Titans, Jason the
Oh my
Argonauts,
God.
and,
Yeah.
you know, and so I think, and I obviously stop motion continues to be involved in these movies. But I mean, we just had less, like back then, it was like less big movies like that, you know. So when you had them, they were, I mean, I got I back then, I was not like a kid back when those movies came in, but I was watching them and I was a kid. And so, you know, and I was, oh, that's where I probably got obsessed with Medusa. I mean, I read Edith Hamilton's mythology book with my mom, but I think like probably where I really was concerned about Medusa, first you're afraid of her and, you know, in that old movie, and then you're like, God, what's the story? What's her story? And then you're like, oh, well, she kind of, you know, got the shaft, and then you're so I don't know. I think it's an it's fun. I mean, monsters are just fun in general. Like, I mean, I like to be scared by them, and then I like to feel bad for them. So it's
Sure. Talk to me a little bit how you were getting into comics, because I mean, since I chatted with you last, or since we spoke, you've written some books, like a series, Plastic Girl, correct?
yes,
And so, oh no, go ahead.
Oh no, and Plastic Girl plays around with this concept as well. I mean, it's, you know, set in the climate apocalypse, and a young girl is out on her lake, kind of living alone, and most of the adults are dead, and she's looking for life all the time. And she finds some creature out in this lake that's alive, that shouldn't be alive. Looks like it's been born out of our plastic, out of our waste, but something more, like whether it's parasitic or symbiotic, and she's like able to interact with it in a way that they can build other animals, and they like start rebuilding this island, and then things get a little darker. But yeah, it's like this it, so it's playing around with found like humans and interacting with a new species and like what's going to happen there. So it's
How many books are there? Because I think I bought like one of the first books from you, maybe at like when we met a long time ago or at a
yeah.
convention, or I have it somewhere.
Originally, and that was probably the novella, which was because it originally was just a short story that I wrote for my daughters that became,
Yeah, okay, I remember
yeah.
now. Yeah.
And so that's Plastic Girl Evolution. And then that was all it was going to be. And then I don't know, I got hit with the whole three book trilogy. So there, so it has the prequel novella. There's book one, which is Plastic Girl. And then there's book two, that's Plastic Girl Extinction. And God help me, I'm finishing Plastic Girl Eradication, which is the final book. I'm doing the final edits to send to my copy editor this month. So that will resolve that, you know, series or conclude it for me. But it's not an easy one to
Well,
end.
writing isn't easy, right? Or
No.
finding the time, right?
Yeah, finding the time. But yeah, I do like to do novels too. And then comics I got into. I like both. That's the problem. It's like trying to find time for both those things is the magic,
Sure.
the
Which
sweet
do you
spot.
find sort of like it's I you know kind of you know I ask dumb questions, that's my thing. Which do you find kind of easier to write for, like in your brain, or like what is your talent more drawn towards, like, right? Because obviously writing in comics, right, you're kind of like writing for somebody else, and I don't know how you write, whether it's like the DC method or the Marvel method, where it's like panel by panel, or you're just like this happens on this page, but you're sort of almost writing instructions for an artist to follow, whereas a novel, I would imagine you're sort of like just pouring everything out on the page, right?
Yeah, I mean, okay. So I know I mean it's interesting. I went to college to write books in my mind, and then I got distracted by a screenwriting class. And so I studied screenwriting and came out here and did screenwriting, and that was what, you know, I spent my 20s doing is screenwriting. And then I wanted, when I had my first daughter, I wanted to get back into writing these science fiction novels and fantasy novels that I wanted to write.
Sure.
So I started working on that. And then I, silly me, I went to a Comic-Con, and then it was, then I was in trouble. It was, you know, I've made film is one of those things where I have lots of screenplays that I've written, that I've had lots of meetings about and had a lot of almost, you know, make, you know, it's just so hard. I mean, even when you sell screenplays and when you have great meetings and when you do all this stuff, like only so many films get made, right? And so you have a lot of stories that you've written that you haven't seen. And so I think comics appeal to me for that reason, because I like what I liked about screenwriting is that you had a collect, you were going to write something and then you were going to send it to another artist and then they were going to do something with it and then they were going to send it to another artist. The editor, you know, it was going to go through all these artist hands and all these different people were going to be involved in it. And so it was this collaborative nature, and I love that about film. And then at some point you get frustrated and you just want to tell your story. So that's what I love about books. Because you can do that to a certain extent. But then when I just, but comics gives me that same kind of satisfaction where, yeah, I do write it panel by panel. However, I'm very flexible if an artist is like, I have a different idea, you know, then and does it a little different. I'm fine with that too. But yeah, it's hard to tell which one I like better or enjoy more. I mean, obviously, writing is, I don't know if you get more credit for writing in, you get a little bit more credit for the final material, I think, in novel writing, obviously, because you're really the only one involved. Credit or blame, right? But the and screenwriting, you know, you probably get a little bit more credit than you do in comics. But I don't know. I like comics because it's a little more contained, and I know I enjoy it a lot too. I don't know. I'm rambling. I just
No,
realized.
well, that's what we're here to do. We're here to
Yeah.
ramble.
And you know, I have to say I've gotten a lot of joy out of it, like being in these anthologies and meeting different creators doing this cool stuff. And you know, you realize how many fun, creative people, they're very talented, you know, just making cool stuff all the time. And that's what's fun about it more than anything. And it's a kind of, I mean, there can be toxic elements in any community, but I've had a mostly positive experience, the people I've met, you know, in comics. So,
Sure. I
yeah.
mean, it's a very small community, especially in
Yeah.
Los Angeles. So it's like if you're a jerk, people are going to find out, right?
It's true, right?
Yeah. Nobody's discovered me yet, but here we go.
Yeah. Don't let anyone
Don't
know.
let anyone know. Don't say it on the podcast, Christian.
Your dark side.
No, I mean, so I mean, one of the things that's always interesting to me talking about, particularly because we live in LA, I mean, I do tend to talk to a lot of people who are, you know, into screenwriting or trying to get into movies and stuff like that. And even some screenwriters have had a problem with like, yes, I studied screenplay writing and then I shifted to comics. And they were like, I had a hard time, like
Yeah.
just in the language. Did you have any difficulty with that at all?
Well, yes. And, you know, luckily with Pistol, I mean, when I first started Pistol, I decided to do something weird. You know, I started with my artist friend who'd also never done a comic, which maybe was like, you know, not our smartest move, but we both like looked at a bunch of comics. We tried to do it. And then what I did realize is that, you know, we're speaking, you know, we're having to learn as we go. And, you know, like, okay, this, I had a tendency to write more for film at first. And Mark, when Mark MacTel came on and he had more of a comic background, you know, through conversations with him, and just if, I think if you're open to learning from other people, you know, he just when he would call me, I'm very intuitive. He would be like, Jessica, you know, like I'm trying to do all of this in one page, but I go, oh, am I writing a film again? He's like, yeah, you're writing a film again. I'm like, okay, give me a minute. I'll rewrite it all. So it is a bit, it took, it was a learning curve, you know, and I'm sure I still make mistakes, but I think I think I'm doing much better. Let's just put it that way. I'm like with this Mary Shelley script, I'm pretty happy with it. I feel like I'm hitting my stride in the comic writing, but it definitely was a learning curve. It's not even a learning curve. It's breaking a habit. You know, when you write something for 10 years, like screenwriting, I mean, I even do it when I'm prose writing. It's like just flipping those switches is hard sometimes. I'll find sections of my novel. I'm like, oh, what are you writing a script, Jessica? This isn't a book.
Yeah. That's funny. That's great. Yeah. Got to shift. Got to put it in, you know, different gear. Shift. No. So can you talk to me a little bit too about, because I re-listened to our previous interview, again, parttimefanboy.com. You can just look up the name Jessica. It'll pop up. Or Pistil, P-I-S-T-I-L. But one of the things that was what you told me in that previous interview, you know, was how you discovered comics at a convention. But like, as a dad of a daughter who is now a teenager and stuff like that, when I wanted to get her into comics, for me, it was very much like, it was a bit hard to get things that I thought would be like cool for her, you know, to pick up. When you first got into comics or discovered like the comic book community, was it hard for you to find stuff that you sort of like gelled with or identified with, or with, you know, let's face it, like a decent female protagonist who wasn't like huge boobs, big butt, you know, skin tight costume. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like what were the things that kind of like sucked you in when you went to that first convention?
Well, I'm trying to go back. Cause I mean, I obviously, and you know, I did read comics when I was younger.
Sure.
But I don't think, in high school, college, a little bit. I think though, when I really dove into comics, it was probably when I had my kids, because I mean, there was just so much and continues to be so much middle grade and YA material.
Yeah.
A lot of young. So I guess I would say, you know, before the conventions, the library was always a great place because the library has a, you know, the children's section for graphic novels. Yeah. And so you can kind of see what's out there. I think even before I went to a big Comic Con, I went to a zine fest here, which was not great for kids.
Yeah. Those can be a little iffy sometimes. Yeah.
Everyone was covering up everything. And that was a learning curve. I'm like, all right, the zine fest might not be, you gotta be older for the zine fest.
We
had a good time going, but I think where I found myself in the small press area and the Artist Alley area and the more independent creators, I was able to find some really great material for them, even, you know, just in a day of looking around. Like, and so there was not necessarily a ton, but there was enough, right? And at some point at the time, get something a little older for my kids who aren't doing it. But I mean, we've just, I could write a huge list of really great middle grade YA stuff that avoids all that, you know, body image thing. Yeah. And I don't know. And so, I mean, I definitely found it in the small press and the Artist Alley. And then obviously, I mean, there's First Second Books has some stuff and you've got, you know, Boom, IDK, you can
Scholastic.
Find
Scholastic. Yeah. I mean,
Scholastic. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But you know, but in the, I always am like looking for the, I do search out the indie titles. I do try to find them. And like, Fanbase had a good, book that my girls like, Kinsay, and you know, and
Kinsay is a great book.
Yeah. And so I have that and that's just popping in my head, but there's just so many others too. And Megan Hutchinson was one of the first books that I got for my daughter at a convention. It was like called Will of the Wisp, I believe. And it was really creepy, but she loved it. So it was a creepy murder story. But yeah, so trying to find that out and search it out and avoid the other stuff is... And now I want to write you a list because I'm doing a poor job listing things off.
Well, I've also got lists, so we could trade. Yeah, you know,
we should trade lists for sure.
There's definitely, I'm sure we have plenty of the same list. But it's funny to me how, I mean, for me, you know, it was like an active search, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, where I was like, I've got to go search. And at the time when my daughter was younger, you know, for me anyway, it didn't seem available, or there was definitely stuff where I was like, I'm definitely not showing her that. You know what I mean?
Of course. Yeah.
And
of course.
I tended to stay away from a lot of like superhero stuff because I was just like, look, you know, unless it was like older Jack Kirby stuff or, you know, things that weren't. So, you know, by the time you're sort of getting to like the late 70s, early 80s, it's like all bets are off, you know, mid 80s.
It is hard in the superhero genre to go back in time and do a historic, like show them old comics that maybe you liked, because there's problematic things in there that I think at that time period kind of went over our heads sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you were growing up in that culture, so you didn't realize. I mean, you did. I mean, as a girl, I'd be like, oh, that's ridiculous, you know?
Yeah. Well, I didn't even want to show her Archie at first. I was like, I don't, you know, two girls just chasing around this Reddit. Like, I don't want my daughter being like influenced by that. And then she got a little older and I handed her one and she loved it. But what was interesting to me was that she was very much like, these women are dumb. Like, you know what I mean? But she still enjoyed it, you know?
Well, Archie was probably one of the first comics I read because that was up at my grandma's. Attic bedroom, and I found a box of them, and I definitely read them all, and was like, God, these girls. I think I thought the same thing. I'm like, these girls are out of their minds. What is happening?
yeah.
But they were all. So were the guys. The guys were really dumb in that too.
Yeah.
So, you know, equal opportunity.
Equal opportunity. Equal opportunity. Stupidity. I'm a poet, and I didn't even know it. Yeah. So talk to me about how you're working this Kickstarter, because this is the first issue. This is like how many pages? Like 23 pages? Is that right?
This one, it's 28 pages.
Oh, okay, 28.
And the idea for this Kickstarter is, one, I wanted to do Kickstarter because there's a whole like thriving comic community on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know, and I don't think I will. I didn't want to do I'm going to eat these words probably, but I didn't want to do the hardcover, full size graphic novel on Kickstarter. I wanted to do kind of a special edition with its own cover, and like a small, you know, like a 28 page version of the prologue with a little extra art and, some cool stuff. And so I wanted to test that out in Kickstarter and see how it would do. And you know what? It's been going really well.
Yeah. I mean, you funded already, so that's great.
Yeah, I funded. And it was, you know, I wanted to do something smaller. I didn't, because a big graphic novel is not a small funding goal. So I wanted to start somewhere where I felt that I could accomplish it. And, you know, there's been a lot of people that I've learned from, which I really appreciate. Like, obviously, Russell Nolte and Charlie Stickney and Clay Adams, just watching so many people do their successful Kickstarters. You know, I've learned a lot from them, and just trying to soak that all in before I did it one time was really helpful. And hopefully I didn't just mangle everyone's name, but or mumble them. But, you know, it's just been... it's been great. So this was a chance to reach out to fans on Kickstarter and see if Mary Shelley's School for Monsters was something they would be interested in, and it would appeal to them. And it seems like it is. And so that was exciting. And I was excited about it and relieved, because, you know, it's a lot of work actually to just put the campaign together. You think it's not. You think, oh, this is fine. I can just fill in all these little, and then you're like, oh no, this is a lot. This is a lot of work.
Yeah. So, I mean, this book is a prologue to a larger graphic novel. Is that correct?
Yes. And I want to be clear. It acts as the prologue. So it will be in the larger graphic novel as well.
Oh, okay.
And then there's an additional story. So it's a kind of a weird, I always am doing this, like, it's a standalone, like you can just read it on its own, the origins, like you'll feel perfectly content. You've read a complete, like, this happened, and, you know, and you get a story, you get the back in time story. But the larger graphic novel will have that in it, but it then continues on in modern day, tells you the first chapter, you know, the beginnings of not the beginnings of the school, but it will tell you the next story, which is La Llorona in the Machine.
Gotcha. And so with the graphic novel, are you funding that yourself? Like, are you pouring money into that yourself?
Yeah, so my Most likely that my plan with that is to publish the hardcover, like a small run hardcover edition of it. If paper cost and my printer could calm down and
on your own. So you're doing that, like self-funding it on your own.
Yeah, I think
Oh, wow.
So. I think that's my plan, unless like I feel that, you know, I want to see how this campaign ends and if this seems like a place, but this was, my intention was to run this Kickstarter for this, like some cool stuff and a cool edition, like an exclusive Kickstarter or Comic-Con edition of Origins, and then do the big book myself. And then my hope is then to eventually partner with a larger distributor for the paperback at some point.
Oh, interesting.
Because it is middle grade, there's a huge audience for middle grade.
Yeah.
And my company is kind of small. So yeah, so I'm this is what I've learned from screenwriting. I want to finish a product and have fans. And then if there's a larger hunger for it, then I would need to partner with someone else. Cause
gotcha.
For graphic novels, it's one thing to publish books. That's still hard and takes a lot, but with a graphic novel, it's just, you know, with the art and everything and the expense, it's like, you want to do it right if you go out wide with it, I feel like. So
yeah.
Right's not the right word. I just want to if I do the paperback, do it with partnering with someone a little more traditional so that they can have a larger reach, I guess.
Sure. But why not just jump to that step with the hardcover? I mean, the graphic novel is pretty much, it's done, correct? Like it's
yeah,
ready
it's
to
done.
Go. So can you pitch to publishers, or is that something you just don't want to deal with or do? Have you pitched to publishers? Like, because
I haven't, I maybe have talked to one publisher about it, but it was, kind of more casual than, you know, and so I haven't pitched it, and it does probably come from, you know, my screenwriting times where I wanted to finish this book and have it printed like one edition the way I wanted to do it.
Okay.
And then, you know, I mean, I'm not going to turn anyone away, but no, I haven't actively tried to pitch anyone for the hardcover. This was kind of the road that I started to take, and I get kind of on, I make my plan and then I focus it. And I did want to have also my company, Wicked Tree Press. I, you know, ideally I get to a place with this company that I can, you know, produce, do the production of the comics, and then ultimately, yes, get to a point where I'm partnering with a larger distributor. So yeah, so that's like baby steps, right?
Sure.
So I think partially I want to have this one. I want to have this one. I know I have Pistol, but I wanted to have this book, see it through as Wicked Tree Press.
Sure.
The hard part. Yeah. So that's the.
Oh, that's interesting.
I just talked more about that randomness than I meant to, but
no. I mean I mean, it's interesting because just looking at what's available on the Kickstarter, like the art looks fantastic. Everything looks great. And quite honestly, I'm like, this is something that I could see coming from like an Image or a Boom or even a Scholastic and stuff like that. And I'm thinking to myself, Jessica, don't pour your own money into, like, you know what I mean? Save yourself some trouble.
I know that you're right, Chris. I know that you're right, because it's just like, I see that myself, and I want that for the book, you know?
Yeah.
I do think that, you know, I was just telling my husband, I did like all these workshops with these students 2 weeks ago. And it was the first time I talked about Mary Shelley to any other kids except my kids and their friends, because they're at my house and they keep looking at the art and they're always into it.
Yeah.
Which was a good sign when your kids' friends will take a minute and look at something and actually really like it.
Sure.
At 13, usually that's a,
yeah,
that's a, I'm going to take that as a win. But the, you know, I went and did these workshops, and the students just came to life about these characters and this project, and they saw the art and they got so excited. And it was like, it was just a great day, because I was like, it was great market research on accident. You know, I was like, I was just doing it to, you know, volunteer at a school and do these presentations, but it went really well. And yeah, I do think I see it long term as something that could go more mainstream for like the middle grade YA audience, and at a larger publisher for sure. Yeah.
Sure. No, I mean, like I said, I mean, it looks, It looks fantastic to me. I mean, just basically visually, and I've read, you know, your stuff before. So I'd imagine like, yeah, there's a great story there knowing you a bit. Mm-hmm. So, and knowing your work.
It's just different than my other things. So,
well, the concept is really, I mean, it's funny yeah. because when you got in touch with me and I was like, oh, great. You know, she's doing something else, you know, yeah. something new. And I knew that you had contributed to some anthologies too. I think one of the ones that I was kind of involved in with a very small story.
Yeah, you had a great piece in it. I loved yours.
It wasn't great, but thank you.
Well, I loved it.
it was okay.
Frankenstein's Vampire or something, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was like Frankenstein's Vampire. I appreciate you. I appreciate you saying that, but you do not have to kiss the host's butt. Well, you're already here and I already like your stuff.
Okay. I still liked your short comic, I'm being honest.
Well,
so.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. It was a little bit rough. More rushed than I wanted it to be and shorter than I wanted it to be. But, you know, that's the
story of everyone's life in the anthology.
Exactly.
That's
the way it goes. No, but I mean, like, because I read Pistol, right? And I was like, oh, okay. And I know that you had did some Cthulhu stuff, right? And I was like, oh, cool. Like this looks very different. And it's like you zigzagged into a whole other zone and stuff like that. And so, I mean, obviously you have Plastic Girl, which I have not read, you know, the whole trilogy of, you know, or what's out, all of it. But how much of it, you know, Pistol was a much more sort of like when listening to that interview, I was like, man, we got really like grounded and we were talking about like serious issues and stuff like that. Yeah. So for this, for you is a little bit more of a shift. Was that easy for you? Was it just like, I just want to have fun and do something lighter and obviously maybe something more that your kids could read, your daughters could read?
Yes. I wanted to do something a little more fun.
Sure.
That was definitely, I wanted there to be monsters.
Yeah.
I wanted to be able to get into some serious things without going crazy.
Sure.
And I definitely wanted something that my daughters could read and engage with right now in a way that would be exciting to them. And they do love, I mean, they plow through and devour every possible graphic novel they can get their hands on. And
it's like, as soon as you've bought it, they're done. It's just like I haven't even gotten home yet.
The library, guys, we can't go through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I can't fit them in my house anymore. Like I literally cannot.
Yeah.
Buy physical books anymore or I won't fit in my house. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So luckily I love the library. So that works out. But the, yeah. And so I definitely wanted to make something they can read Plastic Girl, but it's not that it's like, you know, I will have to say, and just to give a little bit of a story about the art, you know, we did Nightmare Theater anthology together that Clay Adams and David Schroeder put together.
Yeah.
And I was in that anthology. I almost wasn't in that anthology. And last minute I was in the anthology because I that's a long story. I won't get into it, but and I was previewing it and I did that anthology with Mark MacTel from Pistol. And we did a little creepy, story that I want to make into a short film at some point called The Keeper.
Nice.
And then I was flipping through the preview and I saw Anna Wisecheck's art in All Kill Your Darlings, which was written by Alex Breen. And I don't know what it was, but she did this fire and this light in this creature. And I don't know. I was like, God, I really, for some reason, that art is like telling me to reach out to this person. And
oh, nice.
So I at that time I was just starting to think about this idea. Like I had come up with the idea. It just hit me one day. Just, I was thinking about Mary Shelley. I was like, oh, I really want to do a monster thing with Mary Shelley. And I was thinking about it and I got the overall idea. And then I saw this preview and then I reached out to her via email because she lives in Poland and
oh wow,
yeah. And I said, hey, I really loved your piece, we were in this anthology together, do you want to do this other anthology with me with these characters to see if, like, you know, we work together well and we enjoy the process. And we started, and I mean, the minute she sent me the first character design, I was like, we are going to make a special book. Like her art everything she sends me blows me away for the most part. And like, I like to take my little writer credit, but she's doing an amazing job on the art. And you know, so that's like, there was just, it's just nice. Like, we had such a good time on the, it's just weird when you write, you mostly work with someone on email because, you know, you live far away. But she just did a fantastic job on the Cthulhu piece, which was in the Battle Royale one, which was Forever Home. And it was Frank and Shell had to rescue Necro, the Book of the Dead, had gotten kidnapped by this cult, and they were making Cthulhu and Shoggoth fight each other in like a, some grotesque like gladiator dog fight monster ring thing. And so she and Frank had to go rescue them and bring them back to the school for monsters. So that was our first little thing that we did. So they actually appear, they've made an appearance before this for
So that anthology will be like if this becomes huge, that'll be like the first appearance and be worth tons of dough.
Yes. Tons of dough,
tons of cash. Speculators. Yeah, right. Seek it out now. Yeah. No, we don't like the speculation market. Yeah. It ruins everything.
Yeah. But no, we had a great time making that. And then that's where Joel Rodriguez came in, and he's doing the lettering and design of the book. And it's just, it looks great. And yeah, I'm really enjoying it. And so I'm feeling pretty positive about it. I agree with you. The printing part is my least favorite part. It stresses me out to a big degree, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm very impressed that you're doing it at all. I mean, you know, people are always talking about Kickstarters and stuff like that and trying to convince me to do. And I'm like, no. I just don't have the time or the mental. I'll be like slamming my head against the screen. It's not going to work unless I can like. Unless I win the $2 billion tonight on the, right? The drive, oh,
no, you know, have to go buy the ticket, right? I keep doing that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the Kickstarter thing was so funny because I feel like I watched so many people do Kickstarters, and I started a couple, like, you know, I started one for Plastic Girl, and I was just like, I don't really want to Kickstart Plastic Girl. I'm like, don't have a desire for that. And then, you know, I've read some books, and I'm in a group, you know, on Facebook, it was interesting because I kept humming and hawing about doing Mary Shelley on Kickstarter because I didn't want to do the big graphic novel. I didn't want to go that big. I wasn't, you know, ready for that, or at least in my mind, I wasn't ready for that. And it was like one of my good friends, and in October, I was like, oh, I'm going to wait till January. Like, I was working on it. I'm going to wait till January. I'm not going to do it. And Mike, who's like both my husband and he also partners with me in this company at times, was like, just do it. <You know? laughs> Do it already. And my one friend, Kaveri, was the same way. She's like, you have to do it right now in October. Don't wait till January. Just do it, Jessica. She's like, the art's beautiful. Like, just go. And I was like, all right. And she's like, it's a good story, you know? And, you know, so it was like having a couple people just kick you is usually helpful when you're, cause you know, I'll keep it secret forever because that's where it's the most beautiful.
Yeah, you know? yeah, for sure, for sure, for
it's
sure.
Hard, but the Kickstarter thing is not for the. It's not. I think anyone can do it. I just think you have. It takes a lot of planning, you know.
Yeah.
And pulling the trigger is hard.
Sure, like, I would imagine. Yeah, I mean, there's an immense amount of ego involved too. I would imagine for creators, so. That's my fragile ego. No, I can't take it. But I mean, it's great because I mean, the book is already funded. But I mean, how much of a relief was that? Because I mean, this is sort of like your first, I mean, it's again, asking dumb questions, but you must have just been like, oh yes. Like I made it, you know what I mean?
The idea of Mary, because I love Mary Shelley's School for Monsters.
Sure.
I stand behind it 200%.
Yeah.
It is very fun. It is very enjoyable. The art is gorgeous. It's worth it. I love this book. I love this book for my kids. I love this book for other people's kids. I love this book for myself.
Sure.
And so the idea of it failing on Kickstarter because I launched it during a very busy time, like the end of October.
Yeah.
Or the idea of it failing on Kickstarter because I launched it at a bad time when nobody had, and also the economy sucks, you know? So you're like, The idea of it failing on Kickstarter seemed very heavy to me. Like, oh, it won't just be that my ego's bruised. It'll be that I let this project down. You know, yeah. I let this thing that I really believe in and think is really great, like, fall flat on its face right in the beginning, which would have been, you know, I think that's what everyone fears. They don't want, like, something they care about and I think it happens. It happens to good projects all the time, you know, because there's so yeah. many projects. So I was beyond relieved. I didn't know, you know, like, just picking that amount, you're like, this is how much I need to deliver it to the people. Like, that was doing the math to figure out, like, if only this many people back, I need this much money to print it, you know, like, figuring out exactly what that was or a realistic goal. And, you know, I passed it by a lot. And, you know, this Sunday, I met the other goal I had, my secondary goal. So that's good. You know, and for me, I felt I was going to have a successful Kickstarter if I got 125 people to back the project, because this is my first one.
Yeah.
And so I think I don't know. I didn't look at it this afternoon, but I think I was at 127 this morning.
You are currently at 129.
Yay.
Yeah, and hopefully you will have more, but after this interview goes up. Yeah. So that's great. No.
So yeah. And so that was that made me happy because it made me feel a little bit more confident in the planning of the next, like, this is step one. And then the next step is launching the hardcover. And it's just a lot of heavy lifting on a PR, just a lot goes on doing that. And so I felt really positive about this experience so far, which was great.
That's great. Congratulations. I mean, you should feel great about it. What is the plan with the graphic novel? Is it just like conventions, or you're going to distribute it yourself, or?
So I'm just doing a short run for the hardcover, probably 1,000 books. That's not that's a lot, I guess. But that's not for a big publisher. That's not a lot. But for me, that's as much as I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And then I will do that through my company and at conventions. So people will be able to pre-order it and buy it at conventions. And then hopefully we'll go wider with hopefully I'll have big news.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't really started even that process at all, except for just a couple conversations. So it would, you know, that would have to be another thing that I think about. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, shut up, Christian. Just let me get through the Kickstarter. And
I just don't want to, like, you know, we all have big plans for our stuff, but, you know, it's like, I'm trying to go a step at a time, but obviously, you know, a partner is always welcome, in my opinion, because it's a lot to do on your own.
Sure.
Like, that's what it's what I like about comics. And it's just, you know, finding, there's plenty of people that I respect and like and would love to work with. It's just finding, but not everybody fits. You know, you don't fit with everybody as far as those things. But
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And so are you doing any are you going to LA Comic Con? Like, are you doing that circuit, or like?
So I'll be at LA Comic. I'm going to be at LA Comic Con. I don't have a booth there this year. Uh-huh. I have a panel that I'm going to participate in at, I believe it's going to be on December 3rd, 12:30. I don't have all the details yet. It's a writer's workshop panel that I did with some other writers. We did it at San Diego this summer, and it went really well. So we got approved for LA Comic Con. So we're going to do that again. And that panel is kind of a group of different kind of writers. There's like a screenplay writer. There's a few novel writers. There's me, who kind of writes all of them. And then there's another TV writer producer. And we basically do an intro, and then we take questions and we just talk about writing, and we had a lot of fun. So we're going to do it again.
Nice. That's great. Yeah. That's fantastic.
And then I'm hoping to be at WonderCon and San Diego this year, I will be at San Diego as long as I have my Mary Shelley books, which I think I will. But,
sure. Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's awesome. Well, congratulations. I mean, congratulations on funding. Thank you for, you know, coming on to the podcast and everything. It's really great to touch base with you again. Any final words on Mary Shelley's School for Monsters?
Only that I hope everyone checks it out. I do think it is for everybody, and everybody will really enjoy it. The kick, it's on Kickstarter, Mary Shelley's School for Monsters. If you want to find anything else out about the project or my books, you can go to the website, wickedtreepress.com. And you can find me on Facebook under that same name and Instagram. And I'm not sure I'm going to stay on Twitter because I'm hardly on Twitter. I'm hardly on Twitter as it is.
So sure. It's like,
you know, and so I was laughing because I just kind of tried to re-engage in Twitter and I finally found, I'm engaging pretty well with the comic gut people and this is fun. I never was able to find a way to have fun on Twitter. And then I was like, oh, I'm having some fun on Twitter. And then I'm like, oh, now Elon Musk is back. I don't know if I have my opinion is anymore.
Yeah.
Well, he's not back. Been there, but you know what I mean, now he's really there, so.
Yeah, he owns it. He's not just there. He bought it and he owns it, and he sounds like a complete douchebag.
He's a character. I'll just see what happens since I'm not that invested in Twitter.
I think we're all gonna see what happens for sure.
Stick around and see what happens.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I mean, Mary Shelley's School. Ooh, I just screwed that up. Mary Shelley's School for Monsters. Like, looks great to me. I mean, I haven't read it, but I've read your work in the past. And I mean, I think it looks great. It looks fantastic. I'm going to go and throw a couple of bucks at it as well. Like right now, after we get off on this interview.
Oh, thank you. I should have sent you a digital link to it. I didn't even.
That's okay. I mean, these things cost money. No, we want people to pay for them.
I normally am a little bit.
What's that?
I would have normally done that. I don't know what my brain does.
No, it's totally fine. Maybe you did and I just missed it. That could have been a thing too. But yeah, no, Mary Shelley's School for Monsters, currently on Kickstarter. Your name is Jessica Mason. We're just going to go with that, right?
Yes.
Yep. Cool. Jessica Mason. Mary Shelley's School for Monsters. Please go to Kickstarter and support it. This has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. I will say that you can follow us on social media. I don't know which ones I'm going to be sticking around for in the future. I may be bailing on Twitter, but our website is parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Again, my name is Christian Horn. This has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. Mary Shelley's School for Monsters, currently on Kickstarter. Please go support it. And thank you for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye. Part-Time Fanboy.